Book 3, Chapter 1. When Kaiser was setting out for Italy, he sent Servius Galba with the 12th Legion and part of the cavalry against the Nantuates, the Viragri, and the Seduni, who extend from the territories of the Allobroges and the Lake of Geneva and the River Rhone to the top of the Alps. The reason for sending them was that he desired that the pass along the Alps, through which the Roman merchants had been accustomed to travel with great danger and under great imposts, should be opened. He permitted him, if he thought it necessary, to station the legion in these places for the purpose of wintering. Galba, having fought some successful battles and stormed several of their forts, upon ambassadors being sent to him from all parts and hostages given and a peace concluded, determined to station two cohorts among the Nantuates and to winter in person with the other cohorts of that legion in a village of the Viragri, which is called Octodurus. And this village, being situated in a valley, with a small plain annexed to it, is bounded on all sides by very high mountains. As this village was divided into two parts by a river, he granted one part of it to the Gauls, and assigned the other, which had been left by them unoccupied, to the cohorts to winter in. He fortified this latter part with a rampart and a ditch. Chapter 2. When several days had elapsed in winter quarters, and he had ordered corn to be brought in, he was suddenly informed by his scouts that all of the people had gone off in the night from that part of the town which he had given up to the Gauls, and that the mountains which hung over it were occupied by a very large force of the Sedani and Viragri. It had happened for several reasons that the Gauls suddenly formed the design of renewing war and cutting off that legion. First, because they despised a single legion on account of its small number, and that not quite full two cohorts having been detached, and several individuals being absent, who had then dispatched for the purpose of seeking provision. Then, likewise, because they thought that on account of the disadvantageous character of the situation, even their first attack could not be sustained by us, when they would rush from the mountains into the valley and discharge their weapons upon us. To this was added that they were indignant that their children were torn from them under the title of hostages, and they were persuaded that the Romans designed to seize upon the summits of the Alps and unite these parts to the neighboring province of Gaul, not only to secure the passes, but also as a constant possession. Chapter 3. Having received these tidings, Galba, since the works of the winter quarters and the fortifications were not fully completed, nor was sufficient preparation made with regard to corn and other provisions, since, as a surrender had been made and hostages received, he had thought he need entertain no apprehension of a war, speedily summoning a council, began to anxiously inquire their opinions. In which council, since so much sudden danger had happened contrary to the general expectation, and almost all the higher places were seen already covered with a multitude of armed men, nor could either troops come to their relief, or provisions be brought in, as the passes were blocked up by the enemy. Safety being now nearly despaired of, some opinions of this sort were delivered, that leaving their baggage and making a sally, they should hasten away for safety by the same routes by which they had come thither. To the greater part, however, it seemed best, reserving that measure to the last, to await the issue of the matter and to defend the camp. Chapter 4. A short time only having elapsed, so that time was scarcely given for arranging and executing those things which they had determined on, the enemy, upon the signal being given, rushed down upon our men from all parts, and discharged stones and darts upon our rampart. Our men at first, while their strength was fresh, resisted bravely, nor did they cast any weapon ineffectually from their higher station. As soon as any part of the camp, being destitute of a defender, seemed to be hard-pressed, thither they ran and brought assistance. But they were overmatched in this, that the enemy, when wearied by the long continuance of the battle, went out of the action, and others with fresh strength came in their place, none of which things could be done by our men, owing to the smallness of their number. And not only was permission not given to the wearied Romans to retire from the fight, but not even to the wounded was liberty granted to quit the post where he had been stationed and recover. Chapter 5. When they had been fighting for more than 6 hours without cessation, and not only strength but even weapons were failing our men, and the enemy were pressing on more rigorously, and had begun to demolish the rampart and fill up the trench, While our men were becoming exhausted, and the matter was now brought to the last extremity, P. Sextius Baculus, a centurion of the first rank, whom we have related to have been disabled by severe wounds in the engagement with the Nervi, and also C. Volusinus, a tribune of the soldiers, a man of great skill and valor, hastened to Galba and assure him that the only hope of safety lay in making a sally and trying the last resource. Whereupon, assembling the centurions, he quickly gives orders to the soldiers to discontinue the fight a short time, and only collect the weapons flung at them, and recruit themselves after their fatigue, and afterwards, upon the signal being given, sally forth from the camp, and place in their valor all their hope of safety. Chapter 6. They do what they were ordered, and making a sudden sally from all the gates of the camp, leave the enemy the means neither of knowing what was taking place, nor of collecting themselves. Fortune thus taking a turn, our men surround on every side and slay those who have entertained the hope of gaining camp. And having killed more than the third part of an army of more than 30,000 men, which number of the barbarians it appeared certain had come to our camp, put to flight the rest when panic-stricken, and do not suffer them to halt even upon the higher grounds. All the forces of the enemy being thus routed and stripped of their arms, our men betake themselves to their camp and fortifications. Which, battle being finished, inasmuch as Galba was unwilling to tempt fortune again, and remembered that he had come into winter quarters with one design, and saw that he had met with a different state of affairs, chiefly, however, urged by the want of corn and provision, having next day burned all the buildings of that village, he hastens to return into the province, and as no enemy opposed or hindered his march, he brought the legion safe into the country of the Nantuates, thence into that of the Allobroges, and there wintered. Chapter 7. These things being achieved, while Caesar had every reason to suppose that Gaul was reduced to a state of tranquility, the Belgae being overcome, the Germans expelled, the Seduni among the Alps defeated, and when he had, therefore, in the beginning of winter, set out for Illyricum, as he wished to visit these nations and acquire a knowledge of their countries, a sudden war sprang up in Gaul. The occasion of that was this. P. Crassus, a young man, had taken up his winter quarters with the 7th Legion amongst the Andes, who border upon the Atlantic Ocean. He, as there was a scarcity of corn in those parts, sent out some officers of cavalry and several military tribunes amongst the neighboring states for the purpose of procuring corn and provision, in which number T. Teresidius was sent amongst the Asubi, M. Trebius Gallus amongst the Curiosolitae, Q. Valenius with T. Silius amongst the Veneti. Chapter 8. The influence of this state is by far the most considerable of any of the countries on the whole sea coast, because the Veneti both have a very great number of ships, with which they have been accustomed to sail to Britain, and thus excel the rest in their knowledge and experience of nautical affairs, and as only a few ports lie scattered along that stormy and open sea, of which they are in possession, they hold as tributaries almost all those who are accustomed to traffic in that sea. With them arose the beginning of the revolt by their detaining Silas and Valenius, for they thought that they should recover by their means the hostages which they had given to Crassus. The neighboring people, led on by their influence, as the measures of the Gauls are sudden and hasty, detained Trebius and Teresidius for the same motive, and quickly sending ambassadors, by means of their leading men, they enter into a mutual compact to do nothing except by general consent, and abide the same issue of fortune, and they solicit the other states to choose rather to continue in that liberty which they had received from their ancestors than endure slavery under the Romans. All the sea coast being quickly brought over to their sentiments, they send a common embassy to P. Crassus to say, if he wished to receive back his officers, let him send back to them their hostages. Chapter 9. Caesar, being informed of these things by Crassus, since he was so far distant himself, orders ships of war to be built in the meantime on the river Loire, which flows into the ocean, rowers to be raised from the province, sailors and pilots to be provided. These matters being quickly executed, he himself, as soon as the season of the year permits, hastens to the army. The Veneti, and the other states also, being informed of Kaiser's arrival when they reflected how great a crime they had committed, in that the ambassadors, a character which had amongst all nations ever been sacred and inviolable, had by them been detained and thrown into prison, resolved to prepare for a war in proportion to the greatness of their danger, and especially to provide those things which appertain to the service of a navy. With the greater confidence, inasmuch as they greatly relied on the nature of their situation. They knew that the passes by land were cut off by estuaries, that the approach by sea was most difficult. By reason of our ignorance of the localities and the small number of the harbors, and they trusted that our army would not be able to stay very long among them, on account of the insufficiency of corn. And again, even if all these things should turn out contrary to their expectation, yet they were very powerful in their navy. They well understood that the Romans neither had any number of ships, nor were acquainted with the shallows, the harbors, or the islands of those parts where they would have to carry on the war, and that navigation was very different in a narrow sea from what it was in the vast and open ocean. Having come to this resolution, they fortify their towns, convey corn into them from the country parts, bring together as many ships as possible to Venetia, where it appeared Kaiser would at first carry out the war. They unite to themselves as allies for that war the Osismii, the Lexovii, the Nanites, the Ambilati, the Morini, the Diablintes, and the Menapi, and sent for auxiliaries from Britain, which is situated over against those regions. Chapter 10. There were these difficulties which we have mentioned above in carrying on the war, but many things nevertheless urged Kaiser to that war. The open insult offered to the state in the detention of the Roman knights, the rebellion raised after surrendering, the revolt after hostages were given, the confederacy of so many states, but principally, lest if the conduct of this part was overlooked, the other nations should think that the same thing was permitted them. Wherefore, since he reflected that almost all the Gauls were fond of revolution, and easily and quickly excited for war, that all men likewise by nature love liberty and hate the condition of slavery, he thought he ought to divide and more widely distribute his army, before more states should join the confederation. Chapter 11. He therefore sends T. Labienus, his lieutenant, with the cavalry to the Treviri, who are nearest to the River Rhine. He charges him to visit the Remi and the other Belgians, and to keep them in their allegiance, and repel the Germans, who were said to have been summoned by the Belgae to their aid, if they attempted to cross the river by force in their ships. He orders P. Crassus to proceed into Aquitania with 12 legionary cohorts and a great number of the cavalry, lest auxiliaries should be sent into Gaul by these states, and such great nations be united. He sends Q. Titus Sabinus, his lieutenant, with 3 legions, among the Unelli, the Curiosolitae, and the Lexovii, to take care that their forces should be kept separate from the rest. He appoints D. Brutus, a young man, over the fleet and those Gallic vessels which he had ordered to be furnished by the Pictones and the Centoni, and the other provinces which remained at peace, and commands him to proceed towards the Veneti, as soon as he could. He himself hastens thither with the land forces. Chapter 12. The sites of their towns were generally such that, being placed on extreme points of land and on promontories, they neither had an approach by land when the tide had rushed in from the main ocean, which always happens twice in the space of 12 hours, nor by ships, because upon the tide ebbing again, the ships were likely to be dashed upon the shoals. Thus, by either circumstance, was the storming of their towns rendered difficult. And if at any time, perchance, the Veneti, overpowered by the greatness of our works, the sea having been excluded by a mound and large dam, and the latter being made almost equal in height to the walls of the town, had begun to despair of their fortunes, bringing up a large number of ships, of which they had a very great quantity, they carried off all their property and betook themselves to the nearest towns. There they again defended themselves by the same advantages of situation. They did this the more easily during a great part of the summer, because our ships were kept back by storms, and the difficulty of sailing was very great in that vast and open sea, with its strong tides and its harbors far apart, and exceedingly few in number. Chapter 13. For their ships were built and equipped after this manner. The keels were somewhat flatter than those of our ships, whereby they could more easily encounter the shallows and the ebbing of the tide. The prows were raised very high, and in like manner the sterns were adapted to the force of the waves and storms which they were formed to sustain. The ships were built wholly of oak, and designed to endure any force and violence whatever. The benches, which were made of planks a foot in breadth, were fastened by iron spikes of the thickness of a man's thumb. The anchors were secured fast by iron chains instead of cables, and for sails they used skins and thin dressed leather. These were used either through their want of canvas and their ignorance of its applications, or for this reason, which is more probable, that they thought that such storms of the ocean and such violent gales of wind could not be resisted by sails, nor ships of such great burden be conveniently enough managed by them. The encounter of our fleet with these ships was of such a nature that our fleet excelled in speed alone, and the plying of the oars, other things, considering the nature of the place and the violence of the storms, were more suitable and better adapted on their side. For neither could our ships injure theirs with their beaks, so great was their strength, nor on account of their height was a weapon easily cast up to them, and for the same reason they were less readily locked in by rocks. To this was added that whenever a storm began to rage and they ran before the wind, they could both weather the storm more easily and heave too securely in the shallows, and when left by the tide feared nothing from rocks and shelves. The risk of all which things was much to be dreaded by our ships. Chapter 14. Kaiser, after taking many of their towns, perceiving that so much labor was spent in vain and that the flight of the enemy could not be prevented on the capture of their towns, and that injury could not be done them, he determined to wait for his fleet. As soon as it came up and was first seen by the enemy, about 220 of their ships, fully equipped and appointed with every kind of naval implement, sailed forth from the harbor and drew up opposite to ours. Nor did it appear to Brutus, who commanded the fleet, or to the tribunes of the soldiers and the centurions, to whom the several ships were assigned, what to do, or what system of tactics to adopt. For they knew that damage could not be done by their beaks, and that although turrets were built on their decks, yet the height of the stems of the barbarian ships exceeded these, so that weapons could not be cast up from our lower position with sufficient effect, and those cast by the Gauls fell more forcibly upon us. One thing provided by our men was of great service, these sharp hooks inserted into and fastened upon poles, of a form not unlike the hooks used in attacking town walls. When the ropes which fastened the sail yards to the masts were caught by them and pulled, and our vessel rigorously impelled by the oars, the ropes were severed, and when they were cut away, the yards necessarily fell down, so that as all the hope of the Gallic vessels depended on their sailing and rigging, upon these being cut away, the entire management of the ships was taken from them at the same time. The rest of the contest depended on courage, in which our men decidedly had the advantage, and the more so because the whole action was carried on in the sight of Kaiser and the entire army, so that no act, a little more valiant than ordinary, could pass unobserved, for all the hills and higher grounds, from which there was a near prospect of the sea, were occupied by our army. Chapter 15. The sail yards of the enemy, as we have said, being brought down, although two and in some cases three ships of theirs surrounded each one of ours, the soldiers strove with the greatest energy to board the ships of the enemy, and after the barbarians observed this taking place, as a great many of their ships were beaten, and as no relief for that evil could be discovered, they hastened to seek safety and flight. And, having now turned their vessels to that quarter in which the wind blew, so great a calm and lull suddenly arose that they could not move out of their place, which circumstance truly was exceedingly opportune for finishing the business, for our men gave chase and took them one by one, so that very few out of all the number, and those by the intervention of night, arrived at the land, after the battle had lasted almost from the fourth hour till sunset.